just my place that the woman ate and bought everything and
oh, yeah?
put it over and everything. So.
Okay. Also, I should say.
So, Poskim b'chvod achsanya, b'chvod Rav Nordman. Hopefully, we're going to go live this week, so I'm counting on you to make it a good one.
You should take this on TorahAnyTime.com.
Yeah.
Make it really famous.
So, somebody, the inspiration for the for this shmooze. Somebody came to me with a taina. Somebody came with a complaint. He wasn't sure that it was appropriate that there should be such an idea as pizza and parsha on the porch.
PPP.
That to make like a dinner theater event out of Divrei Torah, maybe it's not so appropriate. Maybe it's not so matim. I don't know, okay.
That done all around.
But that was the complaint.
Manhattan has a coffee and lunch thing.
Seder. Okay.
I take it on me.
That was a complaint. So the inspiration for this week's shmooze is to understand why, more than any other time of year, the preparation coming into Yom Kippur, the idea of doing tshuva, is best understood while eating pizza. So, tshuva, we know, is a pella, it's a wonderment. It's a difficult concept to understand how it works, what it is exactly, where it comes from. So I think that a lot of people have questions on tshuva. Sometimes questions that maybe people are embarrassed to ask, or maybe they asked the questions and they didn't get the right answer. We're going to cover a few different ideas of tshuva as we approach the idea of why tshuva and pizza go so well together. So, where is the source for tshuva? Seems to be agreed upon that tshuva is a mitzvah from the Torah. That's mentioned in several places. If you look in the Rambam, in the Sefer Mitzvot, it's very interesting. The Rambam does not bring tshuva as its own mitzvah. He brings the obligation to bring korbanos, to bring sacrifices. If a person transgresses, there's a korban chatos, right? If for accidental transgression, there's a asham, which a person brings even for transgressions which were done on purpose. And there's vidui, that when you bring a korban, when you bring a sacrifice, you have to be mitvadeh. Now, I don't like the translation of confession, because, first of all, it's not really a good translation. Second of all, it sounds like something else that people do. So, the word we're going to use is admittance, an admission. A person admits, he acknowledges his mistakes when he brings a korban. Now, the Rambam says that separate and apart from korbanos, even if there's no korban, even if there's no Beis HaMikdash, even if there's no Holy Temple, when a person transgresses, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to acknowledge what you've done wrong. So there's a minag in the brisker world that when the Rambam says that, he means tshuva. Hainu hach, it's one thing. There's no distinction. When a person acknowledges, a true acknowledgement, a deep acknowledgement means that I regret what I did, otherwise why am I acknowledging it? And I'm not planning on doing it again, otherwise why am I acknowledging it? There's no real distinction between the two. Now, the important thing that we see throughout the Rambam and Hilchas Tshuva is that no kapara is effective, right? When a person's trying to erase, he's trying to delete his transgression. I did something wrong, I want to clean the slate and I want to move past it. So we have different types of kapara. Yom Kippur is a kapara, right? Different sacrifices are a kapara. None of those things are effective if they don't come with tshuva. So now we start to see there's a few different pieces here. There's something called tshuva, and there's something called kapara. Now kapara, it's a Rashi in the Chumash, kapara means to wipe clean. That's literally what the word kapara means. A person that has shmutz on their hands, they wipe it off. That's what kapara is. Now the word teshuva, we're going to have to understand what that word means. In English it means to do the process of shuving. So what does it mean to shuv? We have to understand what shuving is all about. If it means to return, what are we returning to? Where are we coming back to? Where did we go? Where are we coming back to? So we see that the process of tshuva has stages. The Rambam tells us it's a process. You have to have regret. You have to admit and acknowledge what you did. You have to take it upon yourself in the future. I'm not going to do this thing moving forward. But the idea, of course, is an unbelievable idea that we could even do such a thing, that a person rebels against Hashem, he knowingly transgresses, or even if he accidentally transgresses, but it shows a lack of respect, a lack of appreciation for the gravity of the position that Hashem put him in the world to carry out. So how is it even possible for a person to do tshuva? So the Rambam gives us a few more interesting points that really helps to clarify the idea of why do we need both the korban, right, and also the tshuva. So the Rambam says, first of all, if what you did was you transgressed on a positive mitzvah, mitzvah's essay. Person woke up in the morning, he didn't put on tefillin. If you do tshuva right there on the spot, Hashem says, okay, accepted, you're clean, everything's good, move on. Now there's another level. If a person transgresses a prohibition, a lav, and this is a prohibition which does not have kares, spiritual cutting off of the Jewish people, or misas based in, or any capital punishment connected to it. So in that case, a person does tshuva, but the tshuva is put on hold. He cannot receive his kapara till Yom Kippur comes, and Yom Kippur takes care of, right, once Yom Kippur comes, tolin ve'omdim ad Yom Kippur, they're on hold, Yom Kippur comes, now he's cleared to go, you can move on. Now if it's more severe, if he does a transgression that does have kare, spiritual cutting off, or misas based in capital punishment connected to it, or the Rambam includes here a shvua, right, any false oaths that he takes, so at that point tshuva is on hold, Yom Kippur comes and goes, it's also on hold until he suffers yesurim, until hardships come upon him, he does not have the go ahead to move forward. Now if beyond that a person makes a chilul Hashem, that is to say, he transgresses in a way which is done in an open, public way, at that point, tshuva, Yom Kippur, all sorts of hardships that come into his life, everything's on hold till the day he dies. It's only the day he dies that everything is wiped clean. So what we see is that it seems to be there's two aspects to the process of coming clean. There's a tshuva aspect, which is me saying, I regret what I did, I want to move forward. But then there's this kapara aspect, there's this, in order to wipe things clean, things need to happen. Now, if you look at it, you think about it, the idea of a relationship, a husband and a wife. So if a husband wrongs his wife, he can say, I'm sorry, and the wife can forgive him. But depending on the severity of what he did, he's done things that have damaged his own character traits, his own habits. And in order to fix that, certain things need to happen, certain things need to change. So for example, if a person only didn't do nice things for his wife, I mean, he didn't do anything harmful, but he didn't go out of her way, didn't make breakfast for her, he didn't put her slippers by the bed, whatever it was, extra nice things, right? That's like a mitzvah's essay, that's like a positive commandment. So he says, I'm sorry. His wife says, yeah, okay, I forgive you. He hasn't damaged his own way that he relates to his wife. But if he does things which are hurtful, And depending on the severity of how hurtful they are, so now it's a painful process to uproot whatever happened that brought him to that place. So in this case, we're talking about the neshama and the goof, right? A person comes into the world with a soul and a body. The soul always wants to be connected to Hashem, but the body wants to be connected to the physical world. When a person allows the body to take over, when he transgresses and transgresses, and he allows the body to overpower the soul's influence, so now we have to weaken the body, we have to push the body back down in order to bring this person back to equilibrium. So in order to understand this whole idea and to basically understand what happens in our generation when we don't have korbanos, we don't have sacrifices. So good, when we had sacrifices, it sounded like the sacrifices took care of the kapara for us. So if we go back to our equation, a korban, right? I'm sorry, when a person does any transgression which is liable for kares, being cut off, and for misas based in capital punishment, so at that point he needs yesurim. And we know that a korban chatas, right, only comes, a sacrifice for an accidental transgression only comes for those mitzvahs that are connected to spiritual cutting off or capital punishment. So what we see is somehow the idea of yesurim are standing in hardships that come upon a person are coming in place of a korban. Right? That seems to be the trade-off. Because when there was a korban, I bring the korban, nowhere does it say that I need to wait for hardships to come to me. When there's no korban, the Rambam says, I do tshuva, Yom Kippur, now I have to wait for different challenges, different struggles and hardships that are going to come upon my life. That will be what takes care of it. So what's the connection between the idea of the korban and the idea of hardships? Okay. One second while I just find the source. Let me switch different prints. The Medrash says as follows. Zivche Elokim Ruach Nishbara. The offerings that a person brings Hashem are a broken spirit. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi says, Kama gedolim numuche ruach, how great are people who have a humble spirit. Shebizman beis hamikdash adam mevi ola, schar ola biyadu, a person brings this type of sacrifice, that's the reward he gets. Mincha, schar mincha biyadu, if he brings a flower offering, if he brings an animal offering, that's the reward he gets. Misha daito shvela, someone who has a humble outlook on the world. The verse says, it's as though he brought all the korbanos in front of Hashem. And more than this, also his prayers are always accepted. As it says, Lev nishbar v'nidka Elokim lo yisivze. A person comes with a broken heart, Hashem will never push away. A person will never push away that person's prayers. So we see that a person who comes with a broken spirit, a person who comes with humility, that in itself is considered as though you brought a korban. Right? We saw that somehow yesurim, hardships, is like a korban. We also see that a person being a humble spirit, a broken spirit, that is also like a korban. But more than that, based on the same verse, the Medrash goes on the following. Zavda ben Levi Rabbi Yossi ben Patras Rabbanan Chadamar Amar David Lifne Kodesh Baruch Hu. David HaMelech, King David says in front of Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Im Tikableni B'Tshuva, if you are willing to accept my tshuva, Yodei Ani SheShlomo Bni Bonei Beis HaMikdash, then I know that my son Shlomo will merit to build the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple. U'makriv Kol Korbanos Shevatora, he'll be able to bring all the korbanos. Minadin. Why? How does he know? Because the verse says, Ziv chelukim ruach nishbara. Because David HaMelech knows that if you come to Hashem in humility, then, right, it's like you're bringing the korbanos. So if I can do tshuva, Shlomo, my son, who's going to come from me, he'll have the merit to build the temple and to bring all the korbanos. Okay. So we see now two things. We see now also that aside from humility, the Medrash understands that a person who comes and does tshuva, that's like he brought korbanos. Although now we're missing a piece of information. Because before we said that korbanos are in place of yisurim, are in place of hardships. So how is tshuva in itself as though a person brought a korban? There's a third part of the Medrash which says that, okay, Amar Rav Ada kol shepasul bebehema kasher ba'adam. Anything that a Kodesh Baruch Hu says is not kosher to bring as a sacrifice in an animal, that's kosher in a person. What does that mean? How do we understand the concept? So the Maharal here explains that the idea is as follows. When it comes to an animal that a person wants to bring as a korban, it can't have any missing limbs, it can't have any holes, it can't have any disfiguration. But when it comes to the human spirit, we're saying the opposite. The disfiguration is actually what turns it into a korban, what makes it a sacrifice. That means that when it comes to an animal, a broken animal is not acceptable. But when it comes to the spirit, a person who understands that he has a broken spirit, that's the ultimate korban. So says the Maharal, the idea is as follows. When it comes to an animal, what are these disfigurations in the animal? What do they represent to us? A disfiguration in an animal is the beginning of the rotting process, the decaying process, the dying process of the animal. And we want to bring an animal that's fully alive. If you bring an animal that has some sort of disfiguration, you see it starting to break down. It's now moving towards death. But for a person, right, where does that broken neshama go? That broken neshama goes back to Hashem. As you're moving the neshama closer to Hashem, it's the opposite. It goes up. It doesn't go back to the dust like the body of the animal. It moves closer and closer to the source, and the source for the neshama, unlike the animal, is up, not down. So that's the source, that's the idea. And now there's another piece over here, the end of this medrash, that says that for a regular person, for a hedyot, a regular person, using broken vessels is an embarrassment for him. You never use broken vessels. But for Hashem, Hashem only uses broken vessels. Where do we know? The same verse, right? Everyone's bringing the same verse. This idea of that the zevach, the sacrifice for Hashem, is a broken spirit. So the Maharal brings the most beautiful allegory that just can't, it has to be said, that the idea is as follows. There's a Yerushalmi, a well-known Yerushalmi. It's a Yerushalmi in Makos, in the second parak, that says like this. They went to Chachma, and they asked Chachma, a person who sins, a person who transgresses, what should happen to him? Chachma said, let wickedness pursue him for the rest of the days of his life. Yeah? You ask Chachma, he transgressed, what should happen? He did bad. Let him get bad. Right? That's the way things work. They turn to the Torah. No, sorry, they turn to Nevuah, to prophecy. A man transgresses. What should be with him? So Nevuah says, let him be removed from the world. Right? He came into the world in order to keep Torah mitzvahs. He transgressed. Let him be removed from the world. They asked Torah, a person who transgresses, what should be with him? The Torah says, let him bring an asham. Let him bring a guilt offering. He transgressed. He's guilty. Let him bring a guilt offering. They asked Hashem, a person transgresses, what should be with him? Hashem says, let him do tshuva. He'll have his kapara and he'll move on. So the Maharal brings a beautiful mashal, a beautiful allegory to this idea. He says, imagine there's a, right, every good allegory, Jewish allegory starts with a king. So imagine there's a king, and the king has a servant. And the king gives the servant a vessel to use. What happens? He's using it and, oops, breaks. Now when you break the king's vessel, that's not good news. So he doesn't know what to do. What am I supposed to do? I have this broken vessel. I can't give it back to the king broken. So he goes to a chacham, he finds a philosopher. He says, if the king gives you a vessel and you break it, what should you do with it? And he says, you can't bring a king a broken vessel. Let it be broken. He says, okay, that's not an option for me, right? So I'm going to have to go a level deeper. So he said, philosophically, why I can't bring it back to the king. But maybe if I meet somebody who knows the king well, he can tell me how the king would react in such a situation, what would be appropriate, what would not be appropriate. So he goes to an advisor of the king. And he asks the advisor, he says, I broke a vessel that belongs to the king, what should I do with it? The advisor says, I know the king very well. He's a very lofty individual. You can't have this sort of a vessel near such a lofty individual, just destroy it. So he knows that's not an option. He can't just destroy it. So now he has to go to the next step. He goes to an artisan, right? Artisan, an uman, knows how to repair vessels, right? And he turns to the artisan and he says, I have a vessel, belongs to the king, it's broken, what should I do with it? And the artisan says, look, you can fix it to the best of your ability, but I'll be honest with you, it's not going to be totally fixed. Maybe a little piece here and there I can repair, but for the most part, I can't really make the thing whole again. So now the person says, what am I supposed to do? None of those options work. I have no choice but to go before the king. So the person goes before the king, and in tremendous embarrassment and humility, he throws himself at the feet of the king and he says, Your Majesty, I'm sorry. I broke this vessel. What can I do? And the king says, Don't worry. When you came and you asked all the people you spoke to, they all answered you in what they understand of the world. But I'm the king. And if I decide that I want to use a broken vessel, I can. And so the king accepts the broken vessel and uses it. Says the Maharal, that's the mashal for tshuva. That when you look in the world and you say, well, a person's wicked. What happens to a wicked person in the world? Go ask an evolutionary biologist. He'll tell you, right? If you create some sort of imbalance in the ecosystem, so go die from your imbalance. You created the problem, it's going to come back to you, and that's the end of you. That's the way life works. Look at the world. That's what you'll see. Now, if you go to Nevuah, so Nevuah comes from a higher place than what we see in this world. In the place where Nevuah exists, there's no such thing as a transgression. That a person would somehow, an entity would somehow not do the will of Hashem. In the higher world, there's no such thing. How could you not do Hashem's will? You can't exist in that type of reality. So Nevuah says, let him be Neva, let him disappear, let him be gone. You go to the Torah. Now the Torah is all about how to work with the neshama, right? What the neshama should do. But even the Torah can only give us, right, its rules. It's not the whole picture. Can't fix the entire vessel. The only thing that can fix the entire vessel is when you go in front of Hashem. Only Hashem can decide, right, if I'm going to be accept this person in tshuva or not accept this person in tshuva. So the idea we're trending toward, that we're moving toward in the Maharal, is this idea that only by throwing yourself in front of Hashem and saying, I'm a broken vessel, that's the only way the tshuva is received, because only Hashem can accept that tshuva, he's the one that can hold on to it. So there's a famous question, there's a famous idea, that if you go and you look in the book of Bereishis, if you look in Sefer Bereishis in the book of Genesis, we see that our forefathers, who are really three fathers, have this habit, which is very strange, right? Avram and Yaakov go out of times, they build a mizbeach, they build an altar. But they don't bring a korban. They don't bring a sacrifice. You can look in the verse. It says they built an altar. Maybe it says they called out to Hashem, but they didn't bring a sacrifice. So why did they build an altar if they're not bringing a sacrifice? So Rav Yashel Ber Soloveitchik, Harav Soloveitchik mi Boston, says the following incredible idea. He says, what's the idea of a korban? What's the idea of a sacrifice? We're going to try to start tying things together. The Ramban tells us that the idea of a sacrifice is that there are different parts, right? There's the spiritual part of you, and there's the physical part of you. There's the nefesh abahamis, your animal soul. Now, the higher elevated soul has no interest in transgressing. It's only the lower soul that moves towards that transgression. So when you bring a sacrifice, what you're ultimately doing is you're saying, I went against the will of Hashem. I deserve to be shechted. I deserve, right, everything that we saw from Chachma and Nevua. I don't deserve to exist. But the higher neshama never wanted that. It always wanted to be close to Hashem. So the Ramban says, what you're doing when you bring a korban, when you bring a sacrifice, is you're saying, this is my lower self. My nefesh abahamis, my animal soul, deserves to die. I deserve to see it broken. Says Rav Yashel Ber Soloveitchik, the avos, the holy forefathers, three fathers, forefathers, were on such a lofty level that they did not need to see the sacrifice. They were able on their own to totally live that experience of shechting their lower spirit. So now we're starting to come around and understand the idea of tshuva. The idea of tshuva, the way the Maharal understands it, is basically a person's giving his neshama back to Hashem. He's bringing himself as a sacrifice. He's saying, Hashem, I made a mistake. I don't deserve to be here anymore. I don't want to be in a world where I transgress against you. I want to go up to my root where I can't transgress. I want to go back to a perfected state. I want to come back to you. Now there's a problem, because there's two parts to you. There's that neshama that always wants to connect and cling on to Hashem. But then there's the body, which is pulling you down, which is not allowing you to have that connection. Now some people, right, if a person's a tzaddik gamur, right, he was righteous his whole life, so he found the balance where he's able to work with the body. But a person who's allowed the body, through habituation, to take over, now the body's in control and he's trying to break that connection. So what does he do? So says the Rambam, if you never did anything wrong, if you just were lacking doing something right, a mitzvah's essay, right, a positive commandment, just getting closer to Hashem, but you never habitualized yourself to doing something wrong, he says, then you just do tshuva and you're there. The body's not in your way. But if you did a transgression, a light transgression, or a lesser transgression, now your body has started to get into the way. So you need a day like Yom Kippur, which is such a lofty day. Hashem comes close. We all get elevated. We all get so close that even the body goes up. That's enough. That fixes, that pushes away any impediment that the body was creating. Now, if it's a more serious transgression, a very serious transgression, now you have to have Yisurim. What are Yisurim? Yisurim weaken the body. As the Rambam has famously tells us in the beginning of the second parak of Hilchos Tshuva that the highest level of tshuva is if a person's in his full prime, in his full strength, in the same situation, and he pushes himself away from the transgression. Right? That's very difficult. The body's really fighting with him. But when he's an old man, he doesn't have those desires anymore. The body's been weakened. When the body's weaker, the spirit grows stronger, it's easier to do tshuva. That tshuva works. It's not as powerful as the tshuva he could have done when he was young. So yisurim come. A person has to have yisurim to weaken the body so the neshama can go stronger and he can reach that equilibrium that he was hoping to have when he wants to come back to Hashem. And there are some transgressions which are so bad that the only way for him to really connect his neshama back to Hashem the way he wants is by losing the body entirely. Right? That only comes through death. So now we understand the connection between the korban and the yisurim. When I had the korban, when I had the sacrifice, it was such a powerful hamchasha, such a powerful illustration, such a powerful visualization. A person watched this picture of his animal soul being slaughtered. It was enough to break a person's spirit and bring him to tshuva, to weaken the body. But we don't have that. So now, other than the sacrifice of yourself, that's half the sacrifice, bringing your neshama back, the goof has to come back. That happens only through hardships that come into your life. Yeah, Rav Yehuda.
The Rambam has the last level, which is really hard. I mean, once you're explaining the Rambam's level, where even death doesn't, because a few things where even death doesn't really, never understood that part, never tried to go into it, it's too scary.
Which part? The people who can't do tshuva?
Yeah, even on death, there are certain things like, can never be mechaper. The last part of it, I hope it's tshuva, so it talks about it.
So yeah, there are certain things that a person can't do tshuva for, and right. It's a bigger, longer conversation. But you have to also realize at the same time, he says so many times over, there's nothing that stands in between you and tshuva. Generally, the understanding is that there are certain things a person does to get in his own way from doing tshuva. But that's a longer, right, bigger, broader conversation. Okay, so now we can explain some really remarkable chazalim. We can really do some work now that we have this idea that tshuva is being makir of yourself. You're bringing yourself on the altar, basically. And that's the higher part of you. Now you also have to weaken the body in order to get the body to come along and do tshuva with you. There's, we have the Gemara in Yuma on Peivav. Reish Lakish tells us that tshuva is so powerful that it can turn a person's donos, a person's willful transgressions, into shgagos, into accidental transgressions. And then there's a second version of that Reish Lakish that says more than that, that says it can turn a person's purposeful transgressions into schuyos, into merits. So the first one's easier to understand, because if tshuva is all about acknowledging where I went wrong, so if a person did something on purpose, but he didn't yet have a full recognition, a full understanding of what he was doing, there was higher insights he could have reached where he would have said, no, that's not how I'm supposed to behave. I'm supposed to be at a higher level. So now, when he does tshuva, it can turn the purposeful ones into accidental ones. Right? There was a piece of information he was missing. There was a level of recognition he hadn't reached yet. But how do you explain the next one, which is that a person who does tshuva can turn willful transgressions into merits? You transgress against Hashem on purpose. Now you say, I'm sorry, I should look at what you did, the betrayal from earlier, and say that that's a reward you for that? Say that that's a merit? How does that work? But if we go back to our idea here, that tshuva is about bringing myself back to Hashem. And part of that is a struggle with the body. So if the allegory, this is not the Maharal's allegory, this is my allegory. If you think about a person who's treading water and he has a lifeline that he can hold on to. Now imagine two different types of people. You have a person who his entire life He's always managed to stay atop the water. So he's holding the rope. He's very calm. And you have another person who's been under the water. And he knows what it's like to try to breathe and survive when you're under the water. So between the two of them, imagine in your mind how each one holds the lifeline. The person who's never been underwater, he's calm. He's holding the lifeline the way he always did his whole life. There's nothing to worry about. The person who's been under the water is so petrified because he knows the reality of being underwater that he clings to the rope with all of his strength. So the Maharal, one who reads between the lines in the Maharal in several places, he uses the idea of zchuyot, merits, interchangeably with the idea of zikuch, of purity. I think we might have spoken a little bit about that idea. Oh, no, that wasn't the Rosh Hashanah. Okay, the idea of purity. That is to say, what is the idea of a merit that a person has? When a person grows close to Hashem, when he's zach, when he's pure, that's the merit, right? A merit is drawing close to Hashem. And by purifying a person, he gains that merit. So when a person has to fight against his body with all his strength because he's been pulled under, he knows what it's like when the body's in control. It's like being under the water. When he comes to do tshuva now, he grabs onto the lifeline with all his strength. The tzaddik gam, or the person who never sinned, he's just there because he's there, because that's where he's been his whole life. Now, it wasn't easy for him. He has to swim. But he doesn't have the fear. He doesn't understand what it's like to have been under the water. So the person who was under the water, who knows what it's like to drown, when he comes back to Hashem, he comes back with all of his force. His dveikus, his connection to Hashem, is so powerful. And why? Because he'd been under the water. So the zdonos, the willful transgression, becomes chuyos. They become the force that pulls him with such strength right to Hashem. This idea also explains the famous machlokas between Rabbi Abahu and Rabbi Yochanan and the Gemara in Brachos, that b'makom shebali tshuva omdim tzadikim, right, ain't tzadikim omdim sham, that the bali tshuva are on such a high level that even a complete tzaddik can't stand there. This is the idea. Because when a bali tshuva comes back, he comes back with such a force because he knows what's on the other side. Whereas the tzaddik gamor, he's standing there because that's his natural state. He's never been anywhere else. So when you look at it through the side of the dveikus, the connection to Hashem, the bal tshuva's connection is more powerful. Okay, so all these ideas, this is why we say vidui, right, to an extent, before we go to sleep. Why we say vidui before a person dies. Because all these things, this is a time where a person is giving himself over to Hashem. The way the Maharal sees it in his approach, the highest level of tshuva is actually the one a person does before they die. Because if the whole point of tshuva is I'm giving my neshama back to Hashem, the ultimate time of giving the neshama back to Hashem is right before a person dies. So that's where vidui come in on all these different occasions. Now, this also helps us understand why Sukkis is the end of the tshuva cycle. We know that Sukkis really ends two cycles. It ends the cycle of the regalim, right, of the pilgrimage festivals, and it ends the cycle of tshuva, right, of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and all the way through to the end, Shemini Atzeres. So Sukkah being the end of the tshuva cycle, it's sort of hard to understand. We know that there's still some sort of din happening, some sort of judgment happening, but where do we see that we do tshuva in any way on Sukkahs? But here, this idea is very appropriate with the idea we spoke about on Rosh Hashanah, that the three regalim represent phases in life. Pesach is birth, right? Shavuos is when a person reaches their ultimate strength, They're using everything they've gained over life. And Sukkah is Chag HaAsif. It's the time where everything goes back to Hashem. The idea of tshuva, the idea of bringing a korban, is the idea that it's ridiculous to think that things exist in this world outside of Hashem. Everything has to come back to Hashem. When I come back to Hashem, I gain new life. When I come to Sukkot, it's Chag HaAsif. Everything comes back to Hashem. It's all going in the storehouse now, right? It can't stay out any longer. It has to come back in. So now we understand why Sukkot is the end of the tshuva cycle, because tshuva is all about giving myself over like a korban. And so Sukkot is the time where we're all giving everything back over to Hashem. We're going to have another explanation why Sukkot is the end of the tshuva cycle as we move over to this most amazing piece in the Orat Safran over here. So now, when we come off the Maharal, we're in the place where most people are when they approach Yom Kippur. The Yom Kippur is frightening. It's about killing yourself. That's what we just said. You're bringing yourself as an offering to Hashem. I don't deserve to go on the way that I've done things. I just want to give my neshama back to you. I want to be that close to you. Whatever it takes to bring my body with me, I want to be there. And that's a frightening, paralyzing thought. And that's why when we have these ideas, we have to balance them out with the idea in the Orat Sofer. The Orat Sofer has an amazing piece. It's an amazing sefer. Pick a piece, they're all incredible. Where he connects the idea of Shabbos and Tshuva. Now, it's not the Orat Safran who came up with the idea. The Orat Safran was written by the Altar of Slobodka. It's not the Altar of Slobodka who comes up with the idea of connecting Shabbos and Tshuva. It's the Medrash. Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah says that after Adam Rishon sinned, after the first man transgressed, then when Shabbos came, he did Tshuva. And that's where he sang Mizmor Shir LeYom HaShabbos. He wrote the psalm. It's a song for the day of Sabbath. So what do we see? The Medrash tells us that he sinned, but he didn't do tshuva till Shabbos. What happened to the rest of the day? The rest of Yom Shishi, the rest of Friday. He could have done tshuva all that time. So we see it's only something about Shabbos which brought him to the recognition, the revelation of this idea of tshuva. So what's the Shabbos tshuva connection? So some of the Meforshim already point out, right? They ask the question, what does Mizmor Shir LeYom HaShabbos have to do with tshuva? Because you can go read that whole psalm from top to bottom, Psalm 92. You can read it from top to bottom. How many times does it talk about tshuva? Tov lehodos l'Hashem.
Zero.
How many times talk about tshuva?
Zero.
Zero. So what does Mizmor Shir LeYom HaShabbos have to do with tshuva? So some of the Meforshim say, well, you know, Shabbos, tshuva, it's the same root, right? Shin Beis. Shav, Shuv, right? It's the same two-letter Shoresh. Okay, although there's a difficulty there. What's the idea of Shabbos? Shvita. What does Shvita mean? To hold yourself back. Ein Shvisa Ela Lashon Ikuva. That's what the Gemara in Megillah says at the beginning of the third parak. Shabbos, Lasheves, means to actively hold yourself back. But Tshuva, we just said, is the opposite. It means Lashuva, it means to return, it means to bring it back to somewhere. Shuvu Banim Shovavim, right? Shuvu Lashem Elokecha. It's all about returning something. So yeah, they share two letters, but it's not the same word. That's one possibility. The other possibility that Meforsha mentioned is that we say Tov Lahodos Lashem.
So it's a way that returning lost things.
So the other thing that Meforshim point out is Tov Lahodos Lashem, that it's good to acknowledge, to praise. Lahodos usually means to praise. Tov Lahodos Lashem, to praise. The Meforshim learned Tov Lahodos, Tov Lahit Vados. It's good to acknowledge your transgressions in front of Hashem. Okay. But one thing that we do see for sure is that there's a Shabbos tshuva connection in the Medrash. Right? The Medrash says, because of Shabbos, Adam HaRishon, the first man, understood the concept of tshuva. So now we have to come to the understanding of what exactly is the connection between Shabbos and tshuva. Look, Shabbos is a day of oneg. Right? The Navi tells us, Karel Yom HaShabbos, oneg. The definition of Shabbos is oneg, is pleasure, is enjoyment. From everything we spoke about now, does it sound like tshuva is about pleasure and enjoyment? Sounds like tshuva is the opposite. My body is out of control. I want to overcome that. I don't want my body to be in control anymore. Is that about pleasure? So we have to understand what the connection is. Okay, 6 days of creation do not help the first man do tshuva. It's day number 7 that brings the idea home to do tshuva. So what's the difference between the first 6 days and the seventh day? The first 6 days of the creation of the world are amazing. There's all sorts of incredible things happening as the earth is developing. The seventh day is the opposite. It's nothing. What happened on Shabbos? Nothing happened. Shabbos is the antithesis of something happening. What?
The world was completed.
Oh.
Everything was done.
Oh. So what is the idea of stopping? Says Reb David. The idea of stopping is you're done. Vayechulu. It was complete. So there's an amazing idea that comes into the world that only when man knew that everything was complete, that it was done, then he could do tshuva. So in Rosh Hashanah, we spoke about the danger of the circle, right? The loop. A person sees a circle, he sees a loop, he thinks he's in a closed loop, there's no way out. There's something else which is very dangerous. Lines are also dangerous. Okay, now you know. Jews are scared of loops, and we're scared of lines. We're also scared of corners, but that's a different discussion altogether. Loops, lines, corners. Now you know, lions, tigers, and bears, that's for the non-Jews. Loops, lines, and corners, that's what scares us. What's scary about a line? When you're in a line, when you're in a trajectory, you don't know where it's going to stop. If you're constantly moving forward, you can't develop and you can't build anything because you can't work off past mistakes and you don't know how to adjust for things moving forward. So the whole time the world was moving forward and Adam lost the trajectory, he fell off. He can't get back on because things are just progressing and he doesn't understand what the whole picture is supposed to look like. So if you think about a person going into a competition, if you had an automatic elimination competition, you make one mistake, you're out. But if the competition goes in brackets, right? If it goes like FIBA, you lose once, you move into another bracket, you have a chance. You can look back. You can understand the mistakes you made. You look forward, you can understand how you need to adjust. Completion was the idea that helped Adam understand the concept of tshuva. If I see that the world has a cycle, stops at 7, that's the day where the cycle pauses. What happens when I get to 1? The cycle starts over. If it's a completely new cycle that has nothing to do with the first cycle, then I don't have anything to adjust to. It's just, I don't know what's going to happen coming up. Adam saw what the cycle looked like. Hashem said it's complete now. Once you see what the cycle looks like and you say, oh, this is where I made a mistake. Tomorrow the cycle starts again. And the loop is a new loop. And then you get to stop and look back and there's a new loop. And so the construct that Adam understood for the first time is that Jewish time means you can come 20 minutes late. But beyond that, it means that time is always moving in a spiral, right? Every time you reach the point, you can prepare for the next loop. That's really the idea of Shabbos. Shabbos serves two functions. It sits as a bridge between everything that happened, but it's also a way to prepare myself for everything that's about to happen. So once he understood the concept of that cycle, Hashem created the world in a way that you can look back, take note, and prepare to move forward in a new cycle, then he understood the concept of tshuva. He said, if I make a mistake, I can look back, I can see the picture of where I made a mistake, and then I can come and do tshuva. That ties in very nicely with the idea that we spoke about on Rosh Hashanah, that the month of Tishrei is the seven, the month of Tishrei is the Shabbos of the year. It's that time to take stock, and that also helps us understand the following idea. The Alter now asks the most amazing question, like this. There's a second Medrash that Adam meets Cain. He meets Cain after he's killed his brother Hevel. Hashem has given him the punishment that he's going to be Navinad. He has to wander endlessly throughout the world. And eventually Hashem gives him an os, he gives him a symbol. And it says that Cain was Yotzim Lifnei Hashem, he walked out from in front of Hashem. And there's different interpretations of what he came out of. But he bumps into Adam. He bumps into Adam. And Adam said, What happened? What was the end of your din, your judgment for killing your brother? What was the ultimate punishment? Cain says to him, I did tshuva vit pasharti. And we reached the compromise. What was the compromise? The commentaries explain the compromise was that you see that ultimately Cain does settle in the land of Nod. That's where Adam runs into him. So instead of having to wander his whole life, he does have some level of settling down. That only came after he did tshuva. Now when Adam hears that, says the Medrash, he smacks himself in the forehead, and he says, if I knew that tshuva was that powerful. And right away he bursts into song and says, Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos. Says the Alter, wait a second. You just found out the power of tshuva, right? Adam sinned, right? In this medrash, he has not yet done tshuva. He only learns the concept when he sees that Cain was able to do tshuva and he received a lighter kapara, a lighter atonement for doing that tshuva. He says, oh my gosh, if I would have known tshuva was that powerful, and what would you do right away? Tshuva. But that's not what he does. He starts singing. Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos, he's singing away. Tov L'Hodos L'Hashem, L'Zamer L'Shimcha Elyon. He's singing here, he's singing there, Shir, Zemer, he's singing. Why is he singing so much? Says the Alter the following idea. The reason Shabbos is a day of Oneg is because it's a day of understanding the complete picture. When you finally have a complete hakara, a complete recognition of the full picture, that's Oneg. When you finally understand something, doesn't that make you happy? As you're revealing pieces to a puzzle, each piece you move forward, don't you get more and more excited? When you finally build the full picture, doesn't your excitement reach its peak? When Adam saw the full picture of the entire world, that's a tremendous oneg. That's the oneg that comes from recognition of the full picture. When you do tshuva, it's the same thing. Tshuva is the recognition of the whole picture. Where you went wrong, and what you need to do to improve. Says the Alter, that's a tremendous oneg. That's a tremendous joy that comes in your life when you have the recognition of the full picture of who you could potentially be and how to fix it. You realize you made a mistake and you know how to fix it. That's not depressing. That's amazing. You can finally reach your potential. He says, because Adam realized that tshuva, like Shabbos, is a time to be joyful, he sang before, Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos. He did tshuva, Tov Lahodos L'Hashem, right? Tov Lahit Vadot. He acknowledges transgressions. Ulezamer L'Shem Chalyon, and then he went back to singing. So he sang before, he did tshuva, and he went back to singing because he realized tshuva is a complete package that comes together with being joyful. Now, we can connect it back to the idea of the tshuva cycle. Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos is Rosh Hashanah. What's the first singing all about? The first singing is all about the fact that you recognized that you made a mistake. But you know what it is, and you know you can fix it. When you realize where you went off course, that's a reason to sing. That's Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the day where we're Mamlich Hashem, where we finally put Hashem up on the pedestal that He truly sits on. We recognize how foolish we've been. That's why Rosh Hashanah is a day of tremendous joy. It's the first day of the 10 days of tshuva. This is one of the Alter's proofs for his whole approach. It's the first day of the 10 days of tshuva. And what are you doing? You're dressed beautifully. You're sitting at a lavish meal. You're eating, you're singing. That's how you do tshuva? Says the Alter, yes. Because tshuva is a tremendously joyful experience. So Rosh Hashanah, the first recognition of how foolish I've been, that's a tremendous joy that comes into my life. Comes Yom Kippur, Tov L'Hodos. But this piece is not the Alter's piece. This is me connecting the Alter's idea to other ideas we've spoken about. Tov L'Hodos, comes Yom Kippur. Now it's time to be Bitvadeh. And now that I'm in the middle of the actual acknowledgement, it's a more serious affair. But the joy is not completely gone. Even though I'm fasting, even though there are the five different inuyim, the five different afflictions of the day, but Yom Kippur, you still are supposed to be showered and shaved, wearing clean Shabbos clothes, unlike Tisha B'Av, right? Where you're not showered and you're not shaved and you're not wearing clean clothes. Yom Kippur keeps that element of joy with it. Sukkot is the Ulezamer L'Shimcha Elyon. It's the song after. Why? Once I do tshuva on Yom Kippur, I realize the mistake on Rosh Hashanah, I did tshuva on Yom Kippur, now I can see how to move forward. And that's the power of Sukkot. When you've come clean and you know how to move forward and how to direct all of your strength, now you can be Makadosh, you can bring everything with you. You go out into the field, you grab all these funny fruits and trees and plants, because why not? I can bring these up. You take water, you pour it onto the altar, because why not? Even water can go up to Hashem, right? You're so connected to everything, moving forward. So Sukkot at the one point is the end of the regalim, the end of the pilgrimages, but it's also the end of the tshuva cycle, because it's how can I move forward with everything that I gained through the process of doing tshuva. Now the Alter is going to take the idea further, and I think we have time to add this idea. It's so important, because I think that for most people, when they were in Cheder, remember your Cheder, Shlomo?
Yeah.
Or when their wives were in Beis Yaakov, or even little Beis Yaakov, I'm sure nobody spoke about the following idea this way. The Alter wants to say the following idea, that Yisurim themselves, that a person suffers, are also a tremendous joy. And he brings a very interesting medrash about what it will be like for people in Gehenna, and how people in Gehenna praise Hashem and thank Him for putting them in Gehenna. Now, the diuk that the Alter makes here is, I don't think it's the strongest diuk in the world. It's not a diuk which is mukhrach. You don't have to learn this chazal the way he's saying it. But I think that the Alter does not need a source for what he's saying? I think the altar knows it because he's the altar. And the idea is as follows. Even in Gehenna, a person has oneg. A person has joy. Why? Because when a person dies without bringing their neshama to the proper place, he cannot go to the world to come. He cannot experience the same oneg as tzaddikim. And he brings the Gemara from Nedarim that lasi lavo, in the end of days, Hashem will take the sun out of its nartika, out of its purse, and expose everybody to it. Tzaddikim misrapim bo. Tzaddikim, when they get exposed to the light, the complete, unfiltered, hidden light of the sun, then for them that's a healing process. Rishayim, right? When they get exposed to this light, it's painful for them. Mazikim bo, it's dangerous to them. It's destructive. The process of Gehenna, of the Yesurim that come through that destruction, is cleansing, so they know why it's happening. I'm going through this so that I can come to Gan Eden. This process, as painful as it is cleansing me so I can move closer to Hashem. Now tell me, Rabbi Snyder, did you ever hear about someone talk about Gehenna as a pleasurable experience?
No one's ever come back until it's like...
Is he from Canada?
No. That's as close as...
No, that's meaning he has a better... That means he has a better shot. At least they were probably polite and like parve about it. But if you think about the idea, right? When a person's... You can give 1,000 examples. If a person's raising children, is raising children an easy process? Is it painful at times? But is it an oneg? Right? It's an oneg because you understand where you're going, what the end product is hopefully going to be. If a person says, I'll give you $1,000,000, but you have to go through all sorts of trials and tribulations, and a person's going through them in their suffering, but he's happy because he knows he's going to get $1,000,000. And you could bring over all these examples that a person can suffer, but if he realizes that suffering's bringing him to a greater end, so for him it's a pleasure. Now we go back and we come back to the idea of Yesurim that come upon a person. Yom Kippur, a person's fasting. Yeah. But if a person realizes that that fasting is bringing him closer to Hashem, that's not painful. That's an oneg. That's pleasure. Yesurim that come upon people. If a person realizes that these Yisurim, these trials and tribulations are bringing me closer to Hashem, that's not painful, that's a pleasure. And so the altar, this is why I'm saying that the altar knows it, because if you go and you look at Gedolim, you look at people who understand what life is all about, and they're going and they're suffering and there's trials and tribulations and they're happy. Go look at Marana Rosh Hashiva, Aaron Leib Steinman, Shlita. You don't have to take my word for it. I heard from Rav Aaron Feldman himself, Shlita. He said, I've never seen a happier person in my entire life. And you wonder why, because his life was not necessarily been an easy one. He's not the healthiest person, he's not the wealthiest person, but he's the happiest person. Because Yesurim that come on a person who understands what life's all about, that's a joy, that's a pleasure. It brings here a great proof also from Gemara in Bava Metzia, where Rebbe Lezer, Rebbe Shimon, every night he used to invite Yesurim upon himself, hardships upon himself, and he used to say, Boi achai v'rei'ai. Come, my brothers and my friends. Achai v'rei'ai, rei'ai, that's a lashon of, it's a language of tremendous fondness, of closeness. Come, my beloved ones. Come, my brothers. Come, my friends. Now, why would a person talk that way? If a person's connected to the fact that Yesurim bring him close to Hashem, so for him it's a joy. So that's the altar's view of Rosh Hashanah, the altar's view of tshuva, that on the one hand we saw all the ideas, on the one hand we saw all the ideas that the Maharal presented to us, that tshuva is about wanting to give myself entirely over to Hashem, bringing myself as a sacrifice. And that sometimes comes along with suffering that a person goes through in his life in order to bring his neshama out into a more prime position to accomplish its mission. Simultaneously, we're saying, but that process is a process of tremendous joy. If a person can always stay tapped in, to focus, to realize when I have hardships in my life, it's an opportunity, it's a chesed, it's a gift from Hashem to allow me to draw myself closer. So in that moment, a person can find tremendous oneg. Okay, so what does that have to do with pizza? So, another one of the altar's proofs for this idea is the Gemara that Rabbi Berzon mentioned, that the 9th of Av is called a fast day.
Of Av, you mean?
The 9th of
Tishrei.
Thank you. The 9th of Tishrei is called a fast day. And the Gemara asks the question, 9th of Tishrei is a fast day, the 10th of Tishrei is a fast day. But anybody who's mit'aneg on the 9th of Tishrei, it's as though he's fasting. Because says the Altar of Slabodka, Hainuhach, it's one idea. There's two types of oneg. You can have an oneg of fasting, and you can have an oneg of eating. But the idea ultimately is that tshuva is an oneg. By the way, in halacha, there's proofs to this. We have the famous Mishnah Berurah that tells us if a person had a bad dream at night and he wants to fast on Shabbos, he's welcome to. Because that's his oneg Shabbos. That a person can afflict himself, and it's still called an oneg. It's also a great way to understand the Torah that says that Kashem Shemivarchan al Ra, Kach Mivarchan al Tov. When a person says the bracha of Baruch Dina Emes, he has to say, it says the Torah, Besimcha. He has to be happy. And everybody asks, how do you say a bracha which is intrinsically, a blessing which is intrinsically about sad things with joy? But again, if the idea is that if you realize that through those things, you're accomplishing a greater place in the world, you can move to greater heights, that is a joyous occasion. Now, this whole approach of the altar, he doesn't say it explicitly, but from his language, you can tell that he's trying to answer a certain contradiction that comes up in our sages, in Chazal. One place it says, Kol Hayoshev Betainis Nikra.
Russia?
Kadosh. Anyone who sits in a tainis is called a kadosh, it's called the holy person. And yet there's another place in Chazal where it says, Kol Yoshev Betainis Nikrachote. He's called a sinner. You learned that one, right? What's the difference between the two of them? Says the altar, if you lack hakara, if you don't get the bigger picture, if you don't understand what life is all about, and you sit betainis, for you, it's painful. Chas v'shalom, a person is not allowed to bring pain upon himself. If you bring pain upon yourself, you're a chote, you're a sinner. But if a person has the bigger picture, he realizes what life is all about, so for him, fasting is an oneg. If he sits in a fast, he's a kadosh. He's elevating his body, and he's getting tremendous joy from it. So there's no contradiction between the two places in Chazal. So with that, hopefully we answered a lot of our questions. The Shabbos tshuva connection, that's one we didn't answer. The word Shabbos, we see, actually brings us to two ideas. Shabbos is both a shvisa, a holding back, but it's also a tshuva. It's also a return, because we get to come back into the next week with all the information we learned from the previous week. So Shabbos and tshuva do share the same word, because the idea of returning is also built into the idea of Shabbos. Since Shabbos sits as a bridge between what passed, right, the potential you lost, and the potential you have ahead of you, so Shabbos is both a shvisa, a stopping of the previous momentum in order to recalibrate, and a shuvah, return back into the loop for the next go-round. And so therefore, hopefully we'll be able to come out with both ideas. The idea, the understanding that tshuva is a time to throw ourselves at Hashem as an offering, as a korban, as a sacrifice. We want to be back with you. This body is getting in our way. Help us with that. Simultaneously, it's a recognition of the joy of that opportunity to move close to Hashem. So standing in Rosh Yom Kippur, hopefully we'll be able to find the balance between the two, the korban and the oneg that comes together on the day of Yom Kippur, and hopefully the pizza, the oneg of the pizza, is going to help elevate us to connect to the oneg of tshuva. Question? Any questions?
A lot.
Say, so, shkoyach.